I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Time to get outside. This is KSL Outdoors,
brought to you by Trax Power Sports Rentals.
2 hours of stories and information on hunting, fishing, and high adventure. KSL Outdoors with Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the program. First edition of the new year 2022 because of where the holidays all fell on Saturdays with Christmas and with New Year's. It's our first chance to get back together, and it's been fun to get everybody back in the circle. Bob has dropped off for the moment. We'll rejoin Bob Grove and bring Mark Waite into the conversation in just a minute. They had a chance from their road tripping segment to explore Millard County. So we're going to go take a look at some hot springs and some lava tubes and Notch Peak and Hermit's Cabin and a couple of other things they found to share with us. We'll look forward to that coming up. And then also we'll talk some snowmobiling coming up in the next half hour in our usual snow day segment. Roger Eggett from Bear River Lodge, the sponsor of this program, will join us. Navinopsis is still here because we're going to talk some more fishing this morning. And I don't know. You've got time here, right? You're not headed back to the class anytime soon?
No. I've still got a good half hour before lunch is over.
All right. That'll give us enough time to jump in here and have more of a conversation about fishing. And if we're doing that this time of year, unless we're talking about doing some stream fishing, it would be talking about ice fishing. And to help us do that, Randy Opplinger joins us, the Sport Fish Coordinator for the Division of Wildlife Resources. Randy, good morning. Oh, let me pot you up. That'd help. Are you there?
Yeah, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Great to have you here. I mentioned this in the last hour. I saw a report just a couple of days ago from the Strawberry Bay Marina, all of the Phillips family up there, that the ice is setting up nicely and in some areas might actually be as much as a foot thick. That's good news.
Yeah, no, that's definitely good news. I think, you know, Strawberry, I keep hearing maybe consistently 4 to 8 inches with those spots that are 12 inches, and then you know, a lot of the water is going to fade or, you know, get to the point where there's ice on. You know, we typically say that 4 inches or so of ice is safe for you to walk on. And I think we're starting to get to that point where most of our waters have 4 inches or so, particularly those ones you get up to a little elevation. You know, you're talking the kind of Echo Rockport kind of elevation range. So what, I don't know if that is 5,500, 6,000 feet or so. You get above that, you got good ice right now.
Navi, you mentioned it that even though we've had some warm temperatures down here in the valley, it's cold up there at night, right?
Yeah, those clear skies, Tim, when the skies are clear, and like he said, when you're at altitude, boy, those temperatures go way down, and that's what creates that thick, thick ice. You know, it's a really good time to go when we have high pressure because you want to get out of the cruddy air down in the valleys, and you get up, and the sky is clear, and it's actually quite warm, fresh, and then the nights come so cold that it improves the ice mostly daily.
You've been honest in the past that you haven't ice fished in a long, long time, have you?
Yeah, I went pretty recently, but yeah, when the boys were little, we really liked it. My wife would bring her ice skates, and then we'd bring some lawn chairs and ice skate, read the paper while the boys catch fish on the ice. I think it's a great day spent, especially just to be back in the sunshine because of the fog.
You know, and the other thing I think of, Randy, everybody thinks it's just going to be bitterly cold out there to ice fish. And, you know, don't get me wrong, there are days when you wish you were doing something else, maybe. But if you time it right and you keep a close eye on the weather and the temperatures, really the wind is what you have to watch out for. It's nice wearing the same clothes you would wear if you were taking the kids out sledding or something. You usually end up shedding a few jackets or gloves or something else and having an enjoyable day.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think you think you're standing on a sheet of ice and it's going to be really cold. And, you know, honestly, it's not too bad out there usually. Often you can find a nice sunny spot to kind of stand. And, you know, I think you get your mind off the cold when you're out there catching fish and trying to bait a hook and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it ends up being pretty comfortable. And you're right, I often shed clothes too while I'm out there.
We always talk about ice being the great equalizer. You know, in the summertime, those that can't afford a boat or don't have access to one tend to think that they're sort of left out of the good fishing because they can't get off the shore. Here, you don't need to get too far off the shore. That might be one of the big mistakes people make, is they think they have to go out to the center of the reservoir or the lake to actually catch fish. But some of the best luck is probably, I don't know, 50 feet, 100 feet off the shoreline.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right on that. A lot of the species you catch through the ice, you know, you're talking rainbow trout, bluegill, perch, they're kind of shore species anyway, and they don't go that far offshore even in the winter months. And you're right, you don't have to go very far. But, you know, at the same time, you do call ice the great equalizer. The nice thing is you have some ability to get out and walk on the ice and go find good habitat in places like that that you might not hit if you don't have a boat.
Let's talk about some of the gear you're going to need, though. It helps to have an ice fishing rod, which is just a little tiny guy. It's tough if you're, you know, standing 6 or 8 feet away from the hole sometimes. And the action that you get off of those small fishing rods is really fun. But it does make for an easier catch, I think.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Those little ice fishing rods, I don't know how long they are. They're about 2 feet long, are great for ice fishing. And, you know, honestly, they do the job. It helps you get right kind of above the hole to catch the fish. And I think the other thing about those ice rods is they're very sensitive. And, you know, when you're ice fishing, fish bite hard, but they don't necessarily strike hard. You need to be able to detect that strike. And that little ice rod is geared towards helping you kind of watch that pitch on the end and know when a fish is starting to tug on your bait and you're ready to set that hook.
And Rob, Navi, you've mentioned this, that the fish are lethargic. They're still hungry. They're still eating, but they don't move as quickly as they do in warmer water when the sun is out and they aren't under a sheet of ice. So you have to watch for the subtleties.
Correct. When people throw line off the shore out to the, it sinks on the bottom and then they see their rod bump. They say, oh, that's a bite. No, that fish is hooked. He's already ingested your bait and trying to run away. This phenomenon isn't going to happen like that. They detect very quickly. It's not what they think it is. So what you do is you lift your rod, and then you let it go down, but you are visually watching your line. Your line's going to sink at a perfect rate, easily ascertaining how fast it's dropping. And if it hesitates, that's a strike, and then you have to return with a hit. So you want to get to the bottom, pull off the bottom, and then yank it up, and then watch it sink, because they're going to hit it as it flutters down, and you will not feel it. You will only see it.
Yeah, and so that pause is what you're looking for to try and set the hook. What do you prefer for tactics, Randy? Because I think every time I've gone, and quite frankly, when we go to Strawberry because Paul takes such great care of us up there. He tells you where to go. He actually will send somebody out to help you drill a hole, at least in our case, because he knows we're terrible at these things. The other thing is he has a great supply of little ice flies that he just tips with a little mealy worm, and that seems to always do the trick.
Yeah, it's important to have the right stuff while you're out there and, you know, having the right tactic. Those little ice flies, those work great. There's a lot of ice jigs as well, and even some little spoons. They all work great for ice fishing. You use maybe some of the same stuff that you use for kind of open water fishing, but a lot of the ice stuff is kind of specialized and it's smaller. And as we've talked about, the fish maybe they're a little lethargic. They don't strike as hard. And I think it's kind of geared for that situation. The fish are maybe looking for a little smaller things. From a tactic perspective, I think it depends a little bit on the species that you're going after. In Utah, we've got a lot of great ice fishing locations that have yellow perch and some that have bluegill. Those tend to be kind of bottom-oriented species, so you really want to set your lure really close to the bottom. I wouldn't say on the bottom, but just off the bottom. You know, if you could be 6 inches or a foot off the bottom, that kind of puts you in the zone where they're swimming around. Trout are a little different animal. Trout can be along the bottom, but trout can really also occupy anywhere in the water column. So it's it's a little harder to catch trout through the ice because you kind of have to find that depth that they're at. And once you find that depth, then you can start really hooking into a lot of them. And like I said, often they're on the bottom, but often they're not. And if you have a fish finder, it helps you find the depth that the fish are hanging out, or you can talk to other anglers and get their experience. Or sometimes you can just find it by trial error. Put your rod out, try some different depths until you find the depth that's working.
Navi, I think there's a misconception, too, that you can only catch little guys through the ice. But I've seen fish big enough to not have a tough time getting through the hole.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Tim. You got to be willing to put your arm down there to get that fish because they won't fit unless they're long ways through the hole. They can't come up sideways. They're so large. And I want to add to this, when you're looking for a place, look at the surrounding bank and see what direction it's going. You need to think of the bottom of the lake in a reverse topo. So you kind of want to see where you are, how far off the bottom you are, and you can kind of guess where the fish are going to be. It's not just a random thing. You just look around on the shore and see what's going to be extended underneath your feet, and that's how you're going to be able to find the best spots.
Yeah. What do we know about, real quick, Randy, some of these places didn't have much water toward the end of the year when I'm thinking about Rockport or Echo. Is there ice fishing up there right now, do you know?
Yeah, I think there is ice fishing, and there's some water. It's not the most water, not as much as we've seen historically, but there's at least a little water. And maybe the good part of having little water is that it concentrates the fish a little bit. The bad parts, you might have to walk further to get down to the ice.
Yeah. And if you're targeting, by the way, more of the bluegill or the perch like you were talking about, Manaway's a good place. Pine View, Rockport, we already mentioned. Fish Lake, also one that usually turns out some good fish through the ice. Randy Oplinger, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks a bunch, Tim.
Always great to have you on, especially when things get good for ice fishing here right in the middle of the winter months. And I would recommend, if you're going to go up to Strawberry, I always say this, but check in with Paul, Cam, and all the rest of the Phillips family, John, there in the store before you go anywhere. They will give you exactly what you need and tell you where to go. And an ice spoon is actually very helpful to keep the slush out of that hole so you can bring the fish out when you do snag it. All right, we'll take a break when we come back. Millard County, we're headed next. Road tripping with Bob and Mark here on KSL.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Well, you know what that means. It is time to do a little road tripping as we get back out on the road again with Bob and Mark.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
These guys don't sit still for very long and just got back from exploring, I think, Millard County. Is that right, Bob?
Yeah, we spent a day there last week exploring some of the west side of Millard County and found some really cool things.
I thought you were going to say we spent a week in Millard County one day, which
I would never say that.
Some people twist it like that just to make it sound like it wasn't all that fun, but it does sound like you guys had a good time. Mark Wade is also in on the conversation here. But before we talk Millard County, real quick, last half hour we had Mark Hodges on, who just finished his trip to the Grand Canyon, and we talked a lot about how much stuff he packed into that solo kayak with that was inflatable and the challenges that presented. I'm just thinking, Bob, if some of our listeners are interested to see what he brought along, you've got a list of that on your website.
We do. His wife, Shanti, supplied us with all that information. So if there's folks out there that are considering doing that type of trip, go to our blog. You'll be able to find his list of that he took with him and give you a good idea what you need to pack in with you.
Yeah. We should also remind everybody as we start the new year that Mark Wade, no longer down in southern Utah. You're right smack in the middle of the state, or close to it, in Mona.
That's right. Made the move, and, right at the right time of year, right? I had to buy a snowblower just like you.
We were joking about the fact before we jumped on with you on the phone that it's probably taken a little bit of an adjustment period for your body to get used to some colder air again after living in southern Utah.
Yeah, it's not just the air temperature, it's that pushing snow around that's getting the adaptation too, but it's all coming.
That's a perfect segue into one of the places you were going to share from Millard County, Mark, and that is the Meadow Hot Springs, which sounds inviting right now.
Well, right after you shovel the snow off your driveway, you're going to be wanting to relax at this place because it's just south of Fillmore, you know, is the town of Meadow, right on the freeway there. If you go under the freeway from Meadow and head out to the west, just a few minutes, it's about a 5-7 minute drive. You're going to hit the Meadow Hot Springs. They're on private ground. They allow you to make a donation. If you go in there, there are three different pools, different temperatures. And when we were out there the other day, we came across some people from Atlanta, Georgia, that were enjoying it, and they loved it.
Boy, right now with the cold air at night, it does look inviting. What are these lava tubes that made your list, Bob Grove?
Well, out not too far from the hot springs, if you head north, you're going to go in what's called the Black Rock Desert, and there is this massive, if you look at out here, and within those lava flows, there are lava tubes, and so we went exploring and one major lava tube, and we're able to go down through it into a large opening. We came out through a narrower opening, but it's pretty cavernous inside. But they're all over. It's a big lava flow out there, so you're going to find these opportunities of exploring not just on top but below these lava flows.
It sounds like the next best thing to spelunking, or would this be considered pretty much the same thing?
Well, you're not dropping in by ropes or anything. You're just basically walking down into them, but yeah, I guess it'd be very similar to spelunking.
And perfectly safe, or what do you need to know to keep yourself safe?
Well, this one that we went through, I would say, Mark, it was very safe. I mean, it was just a matter of don't fall on those jagged lava rocks, but other than that, I think it was pretty safe going through.
Yeah, wearing the right form.
It was.
Yeah, wearing the right shoes. Lace curtain, what is that one about, Mark?
If you go up from the lava tubes, just probably another 25, 30 minutes up a really well-graded dirt road. And by the way, we traveled several different dirt roads in Millard County. Every one of them was smooth. We were traveling as fast as we needed to go. And so the Lace Curtain is a lava-based area as well, but there's a big wall that it looks like the lava was just melting and dripping off the rocks. And it looks like a curtain of lace. And it is just this huge, maybe 200 yards long rock face, about 100, 200 feet high. And it is just a beautiful place to stop along your way as you go to other points in Millard County.
Wow, that sounds beautiful. And is Notch Peak right there, too?
It is further out to the west of Delta. And so you're going to go up and take Highway 6. Bob can tell us about the loneliest road in America. Highway 50 or Highway 6, but it takes you out to Notch Peak. It's just north of Highway 6.
Yeah, this area is actually part of the Great Basin. I mean, a good part of the Great Basin runs through the western side of Utah, and this is kind of the central base, if you will, of the Great Basin that leads out to the Great Basin National Park in Nevada. And the loneliest road in America runs right through there that goes all the way into Carson City through Nevada, so this is a good start to if you want to drive that road.
With a name like the loneliest road in America, that's either inviting to people that really want to get away from civilization or is not much of an invitation at all.
Well, it's certainly open space if you're looking for social distancing.
Yeah. You want to say something, Mark?
Well, just Notch Peak. We didn't really tell you enough about that. Notch Peak is over 9,000 feet high. It has a vertical drop of nearly 3,000 feet. And it is rated the second highest vertical drop in North America. People like to go and do a little base jumping off there, some rock climbing. It is just the sight to behold to see this vertical face that's almost 300,000 feet straight up.
Wow. All right, give us a little thumbnail. We're out of time, Bob, but give us a little thumbnail of Herman's Cabin.
Well, Herman's Cabin is a rock house that was actually built to the side of a cliff in a carved out opening there. And so we see these occasionally in southern Utah where we see someone has built just stacked up rocks like bricks up against a cavern, you know, an alcove, and build a house into it. So this is in one of the canyons there, not far from Swayze's Peak in the west side of Millard County. Really cool. We'll have pictures of this on our blog, by the way, all these places that we visited last week.
Is there signage to find that or no?
Yeah. In fact, if you just go to their website, Millard Travel, is it, what is it, Mark? Is it MillardCounty.com, right?
That's correct.
MillardCounty.com. If you go there, I think they've got all the information. Plus, we'll have links to that page from our blog. So just remember how to get to us, and you'll be able to get to all the necessary links and information about Millard County.
Well, here's how you get to the boys. We're out of time. Thanks, guys. It is Road Trippin' with Bob and Mark.com. Stay with us. More coming up on the other side of a news update.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.